This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You are listening to Lynn and Ayman, and for our next story, we're discussing how Malaysia measures the poverty rate in the country, as well as how it can be improved. Now, this has been a conversation that's been ongoing ever since the United Nations, let's not give all the credit to the United Nations, but it spiked again after the UN Special Rapporteur on Extreme Poverty and Human Rights said that Malaysia is underreporting our level of poverty and that a more realistic rate would be between 16 to 20%.
So, in case you didn't know, right now we're using two measures, which is the poverty line income and the multidimensional poverty index to measure poverty in the country. So the poverty line we're using right now is 980 ringgit in Semenanjung Malaysia, 1,020 in Sarawak and 1,180 in Sabah. So based on these benchmarks, it looks like only 0.4% or 24,700 households in Malaysia are considered poor, and this is in 2016.
So, of course, the argument then to that is that it doesn't reflect the real situation surrounding poverty in Malaysia because the benchmarks being used aren't suitable for our status as an upper middle income nation, and then this affects the government's ability to design and measure the effectiveness of their policies. I know that there is a hard economics discussion to be had here in terms of how to measure it, but also just in terms of, I guess, the words we use and how we think about this. I'm somebody who has always thought developing. It's quite embedded in my head, you know, that we are a developing nation. It's very much part of our narrative that it's like, yeah, you know, we're on the way up. Our economy is like this. You know, whenever we think about ourselves, that word is one that jumps out at me that I see used a lot. And recently meeting, I guess, different academics, meeting different people who work on a more international basis, looking at our region, they constantly say upper middle income. And I feel like that separation is partly what we're talking about here, just the difference in terms of how we think of ourselves affecting how we think of our poor.
Yeah, because of course a development is a relative term and we are sort of categorized in this upper middle income category. But the way we see our people here, the way we sort of like try to fine tune our policies is based on a perception that was built like long ago when we were still a lower middle income country or when we were rising up the ranks. And because of that, the way we design our policies is not up to the standard of an upper middle income country. So if the income of the country is rising, supposedly then you are aspiring for more people to have a higher income as well. But that's not the case with how we are defining poverty in the country.
Yeah, and I suppose it's also frightening to see how this this disparity might then result in people not getting help or might not people not getting opportunities or a leg up or just, you know, specific things that would be needed because they are not being acknowledged. It's almost as if we're using words to obscure the reality of what's happening, which is a little bit frightening because you can see how persuasive it is to believe that we are a developing nation, how persuasive it is to believe that we only have 0.4%. I mean, that's a great number. it's one that any proud Malaysian would want to believe is the case. And yet clearly, I mean, if you just walk through, whether you are walking through a city or you're walking through a kampung, you know, whether you're in a rural, suburban or urban area, you are going to see people who are visibly falling into that category, and that's not a 0.4%.
Exactly. And like, so because of the level of income that some household earn, they might miss out on the sort of benefits or aid policies that the government is doing. And I think that is the weakness of this poverty line income. It measures the absolute poverty. So if you are below 980, then you are poor. But what about a household that earns 1,000 ringgit, for example? They are only 20 ringgit off from that poverty line, but they miss out from being categorized as poor, even though they are struggling just as much. So these kind of households are just like an accident away from being in
really dire straits, actually.
Yes, in real financial trouble. So that is why using an absolute term like poverty line income is not a very meaningful measure, especially in terms of designing policies.
Yeah, and also I think just having us all take a good hard look at the actual numbers, at the actual situation, because if we don't actually bother, right, to look at something that maybe doesn't make the country look all that great, then we are letting down our fellow countrymen, really, is what it comes down to. So we are asking whether or not there needs to be a means of rethinking poverty here in our country, rethinking our understanding of it. If you'd like to weigh in, let us know. You can call us at 7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio. We're going to be speaking after this with Christopher Chung, who is the Deputy Director of Research at Khazanah Research Institute. That's coming your way. Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bole for Malaysia. Ha. BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's 6:42 and you're with Lynn and Ayman on the Evening Edition. And we've been talking about trying to find a new measure or a new means of understanding poverty in our country so that we actually have an accurate understanding of what the situation is like and therefore what we can do. If you have any suggestions, if you have any thoughts on this, you can call 7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
So we're now crossing over to Christopher Chung, who is the Deputy Director of Research at Khazanah Research Institute, where his research focuses on issues around poverty. Chris, thank you for joining us on the show. So right now, the government uses two methods to measure our poverty rate, which are the poverty line income and the multidimensional poverty index. Can you walk us through how we use these methods to derive our statistics?
So the poverty line income is an income-based measure, and the idea behind it is to look at a household and to see whether this household has the income to purchase a set of goods and services that are considered as basic needs, in order for this household sort of to achieve what society considers as the minimum standards of living. So in terms of the technicalities of how this is calculated is that they will construct what is called the food basket and the non-food basket. And there will be certain items that are put into this food basket and non-food basket. And this will all be converted into monetary terms, in terms of ringgit and so on, to sort of come up with the poverty line. And I think based on this line, then this is matched to the actual income of different households to see whether the household income is above or below the line. So if it is below the line, then the household is considered as poor. And if it sort of is above the line, then it is considered as non-poor. So that's basically for the PLI. And I think for the multidimensional poverty index, it sort of brings in the non-income dimensions into the measure. So I think in the case of Malaysia, we have, on top of income, we have three other dimensions, which is health, education, and living standards. So they will look at things like, I think from a health point of view, is that if the household lives a certain distance away from the nearest health facility, this household is considered as deprived in the health dimension. Or when it comes to education, if you do not have sufficient number of years of schooling, then you're considered as deprived in the area of education. And for living standards, I think they look at things like whether there's garbage collection facilities, the kind of toilet that you have in your house. I mean, these all sort of give indications of whether households are deprived in different areas or not. And these are then tabulated to sort of calculate whether the household is poor from a multidimensional angle. But just that in the case of Malaysia, income is also one of the components in the multidimensional poverty index. That means it gets about 25% of the weight because it's one of the four dimensions. So because the income-based measure is low, so it will also sort of drag down the entire measure for the multidimensional poverty index as well. So that's how the PLI and MPI are sort of calculated.
So where does this element of subjectivity come into play?
So for example, if you talk about the food basket itself, you have to identify, they actually consult some of the nutritionists' views on this to see what is a balanced diet to live the kind of minimum standards of living. So you have items like fruits, fish, meat, vegetable, and so on. But when it comes to selecting what type of vegetables, what type of fruits, when you go to the specifics of some of these items, I think this is when it is not just a technical exercise, but there is also some subjectivity in how we select some of these goods and that go into the food basket, for example. And I think similarly for the MPI itself as well. So when we sort of select the cutoff, let's say we say that education, it is about how many years that you need to go to school to be considered as non-deprived. But should this be primary schooling? Should this be secondary schooling? So these are, I think, some things that society can sort of debate about this and to decide collectively. And it is not just a merely a technical exercise.
Is there any reason for the government to hesitate about revising how we measure poverty?
I think to be fair to the government, even before the sort of the UN Special Rapporteur's report and how it has sort of drawn attention to the poverty measurement issue, the government is actually already thinking about, it's already sort of reviewing and thinking about updating the poverty line. But whether this is going to be, I mean, from 0.4%, whether this goes up to 5%, 10% or 20% is something that is up for debate. But the work has already actually started. But just I think with the UN Special Rapporteur's report, it has expedited the process quite a lot. In fact, I think in the Minister of Economic Affairs in his response to the UN Special Rapporteur's statement has actually also mentioned in his statement that some of this work is already sort of ongoing. So I think definitely it is happening, but just that when and hopefully it can come out, I hope, in the 12th Malaysia Plan. We will see sort of a line that is more reflective of the sentiments of the Malaysian population.
So what's been the practical effect then of keeping the poverty line low over, you know, these past years, past decades, in terms of policy and providing support and so on?
Well, I think, maybe to answer this question, I think it is important to ask ourselves perhaps why as a society we need to measure poverty in the first place. That means why do we need to count how many people in the country are poor and how many people are non-poor? And I think for me, it comes down to the point that because we as a society think that if a segment of the population falls below what is considered minimum standards of living, we have a collective obligation and responsibility to provide social assistance to this group of people. But when you have a poverty line that is too low, which is now at about 980 ringgit, this means that there is a disconnect with how we set eligibility criteria for different social assistance programs. Because people are living above the poverty line, but they are still struggling to get by, struggling with issues of survival and so on. So I think that is actually one practical effect that then the poverty line can no longer be operationalized in government's social assistance and welfare programs that are extended to the poor.
So if we do revise how we measure poverty and then we see a much higher figure, would that have a drastic effect, especially for policy?
Well, I think, in fact, if you look at it, actually the government has already, as I said, because the poverty line is too low, in terms of social assistance programs, they've actually dropped the poverty line as a targeting mechanism and how they sort of use this to identify households or individuals to extend welfare assistance. So they have actually moved to the bottom 40%, which is by definition 40% of the population. And I think if you look at 2016 data, this is about 4,300 ringgit and below. So that means in terms of how government thinks about extending social assistance, they have actually already revised the threshold upwards, but they don't call this group poor, but they call them the bottom 40%. But I think for me, the challenge with that is that we may have confused, or at least confused the issue that is essentially what is considered welfare and what is a cost of living issue. I mean, welfare is something that you extend to groups that are considered poor. They live below minimum standards of living. But there could be also groups that are non-poor but are struggling with issues of housing affordability, food prices, and so on. But these two set of issues requires, I think, different strategies, different programs for us to address them. And sort of putting them together in a group that is called B40, and this is a big group, it's about 2.8 million households, 12 million individuals, I think raised some questions, I think, on whether we actually even have the fiscal capacity to sort of target this group or not. So I think we need to meet somewhere in the middle where I think the poverty line may need to be increase, and at the same time, the bottom 40% group may also need to be rationalized, perhaps slightly downwards, so that we are able to reach the group that is really in need of government assistance in a more effective and meaningful way.
So there are calls for the government to release the raw data for poverty research in the country. Is this something that you feel is necessary?
Yes, definitely. I think the issue of having more micro data for poverty and inequality research is definitely crucial for the country. And I think I must say here that we have to differentiate between micro data and disaggregated data. So we are not talking about disaggregated data because that is available in DOSM's website. It's publicly available. But we are talking about micro data here. And I think micro data for researchers like us is that it actually enables us to answer and analyze more complex questions. For example, we want to understand how severe is poverty and what are the different types of poverty, who are the poor, what kind of profile do they have, what are the demographic characteristics, and if we were to sort of move from the unit of analysis from households to individuals, how would that change the poverty dynamics? Basically, to help us to go beyond looking at the averages, and that enables us to sort of unpack a lot more to understand the poverty problem in the country. But I think from DOSM's point of view, there are some issues or concerns when it comes to releasing the micro data. I mean, issues of confidentiality, whether that will sort of cause some of the identities of the respondents to, you know, be exposed, whether there'll be misinterpretation of some of these more complex statistics that are released. And I think these are very legitimate concerns, but they are also not problems that are insurmountable. That means we can actually overcome this, for example, by anonymizing the microdata. We can release metadata, which helps to explain the data files that are released. And I think in a society now where we are talking so much about knowledge, being knowledge-driven, being evidence-based, it is actually important to have more researchers to sort of challenge and contest each other's interpretation of the data. And I think this will definitely enrich the poverty discourse in the country. And I hope it will also lead to better informed and more targeted solutions and policies when it comes to the poverty challenge in Malaysia.
Chris, thank you so much for speaking with us today. That was Christopher Chung, Deputy Director of Research at Khazanah Research Institute. We're just kind of mulling over this idea that there needs to be a rethinking, really, fundamentally, about how we understand poverty in our country.
Yeah, or even at least an improvement on our current measures, at least like redefining the benchmarks or the criteria that we are looking at so that our findings will be more reflective of the actual situation on the ground.
GBP says, let me ask you, do you honestly think we are developing and so we deserve to keep on procrastinating? I think many Malaysians are in self-denial, especially on the top, because most prefer to see a pretty picture and have selective listening and observation. We should not bluff ourselves. The statistics are rubbish. As long as we do not wake up and do plain proper mathematics, we will never know.
Well, I think we certainly are still developing, especially when you consider there is still uneven development across the country in different states, or even within the states there is still uneven development. So in that sense, yes, we are still developing. But at the same time, we shouldn't be procrastinating. And I do think that there are constant efforts to continue the development initiatives in the country.
For sure. A good point there is being raised, though, this idea that so long as we perpetuate a certain narrative about our country, it's going to be very difficult to look at the numbers that don't support a narrative that we've long believed to be true, you know, because like I said, I was constantly surprised to hear our country in the States referred to as, no, this is why we don't provide you aid, because you are upper middle income. And it forced me to kind of reflect a little bit, because I really had this idea that we are developing, not because it is a well thought out theory on my own, just because that's the word that I constantly read. And so I think in reshaping how we think about our country, that is an interesting frame.
Yeah, exactly. You were talking about international aid, was it? How they are not giving it to us because we are upper middle income nation.
Yes.
So maybe as a question also about how international organizations also define development and how they should also look at not just the general picture of a country, but also the sort of like the more subnational needs of a country and in terms of their development.
GBP is back to say, why is there a need to hide from facts? Is it because we are status conscious? The mind needs therapy. And I don't think it's a need to hide from the fact. I think everybody just likes believing that we're doing well. I agree entirely that we need a proper read on how things actually are, though.
We shouldn't hide from the facts, and also that we need to encourage more transparency in terms of the availability of data. As you mentioned earlier, Lynn, in the question for Christopher, that there have been calls for more transparency in data sharing so that more independent research can be done, and in that way we can have a clearer picture on the situation with poverty in Malaysia.
Law says, I believe that the government is aware of the actual poverty rate in the country, but the current official numbers help to support the narrative that we're doing well, on track to be a developed nation, etc., and ignore the fact that the NEP after all these years is a total failure and a new solution is needed to address the issue. We have a similar message actually that's come through on Twitter as well regarding the NEP.
Regarding the NEP, there have been previous studies that said that it was effective in reducing poverty in the country. But of course, as a lot of us are well aware, it did lead to other effects, for example, in terms of patronage and issues like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that the government is aware of the poverty issues in Malaysia. I think Christopher just now said that in response to the UN Special Rapporteur, Azmin Ali said that they are aware and they are trying to sort of like improve on it. And hopefully we do see that.
We see new numbers, I think. That's what we need to see here. Because I think so long as you don't see that actual shift away from the accepted version of that line, it's going to be hard to believe that you acknowledge it. Do you know what I mean? I think there has to be that.
There needs to be tangible action to see that they are trying to improve on how they measure poverty. So the move to introduce the multidimensional poverty index during the RMK 11 is a good step. Hopefully in RMK 12 in 2021, we will see an improvement in the way we measure poverty.
Robert says, you guys are doing Malaysia Day specials. We have a Malaysian who's world-renowned for poverty alleviation, Professor Jomo Kwame Sundaram, who's actually been on the station before, and that's a good idea. We'll try and get him maybe in future, maybe once we start to see a bit more clarity on the matter. We are in the meantime headed to the 7 o'clock news, after which we come back with our ongoing Malaysia Day specials, What Makes a Malaysian? Keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.